The destination of this coach is Hazard, Kentucky. We're due there at 5:15. For your convenience, there's a restroom located in the rear of the coach.
You gonna get sick? Huh? Oh my God, he's coming at you!
Alright, when it comes to 2-year-old Olivia James, you are not the father.
You've irritated the tool gods. You must now be smeared with the holy grease of disdain.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. It's JG's Radio Free Insanity with your host, James Gutman. Yo, Gutman, what's the ish?
What's up, guys? That's right. My name is James Gutman, and you are tuned in to the final edition of Radio Free Insanity for 2005. This is the year in review right here on WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. And we have quite a show for you guys today. One of the things that I like to do every year, at the end of the year, we like to look back on the top 5 moments of insanity for professional wrestling each year. And I know what you're asking me. You're saying, James, well, what happens if there aren't 5 insane, crazy, out-of-nowhere things in pro wrestling in a calendar year? What do you do? Well, luckily, I haven't had to worry about that, and I don't think we're ever going to have to worry about that, because this year, like every other year, no exception, we had way more than 5, but you guys on the Insanity message boards, through email, and any other way you can get me messages, smoke signals, Morse code, whatever you happen to fall on top of, voted for your top 5 moments of insanity, so we're going to be counting them down right here on the show. Also, while I have you, have your ear for a second, let me plug a little bit too. Right here on WorldWrestlingInsanity.com, the website, we are in the midst of doing our 2005 year-end special spectacular section. Depending on when you're listening to this, depends on what we have up. But we have our readers and our staff voting on things like Wrestler of the Year, Babyface of the Year, Heel of the Year, Tag Team of the Year, Match of the Year, all that kind of crazy stuff. So that's going up on the site. Go check it out, 2005 year-end section. Also, Dr. Tom Pritchard, former trainer for WWE, columnist for WWE.com, has up his year-in-review column up on the site as well. So make sure you check that out. We have a lot going on at WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. And guys, after the new year, it's only going to be more and more and more and more until eventually you're going to go, what's going on? So then you guys will be all set. But you're here right now to hear a little bit about the insane moments of the year. So without further ado, I'm not going to prolong the suspense. Let's just go, and it's time to hear number 5. Let's play it.
Number 5.
What's up, boss? How you doing?
Yeah. What's good in the hood?
Just holding it down, trying to take care of business.
Keep it up, I'm a nigga. Keep it up, I'm a nigga. Keep it up, I'm a nigga.
Yeah, that's right. The number 5, a moment of insanity on our top 5 countdown is, well, it's Vince McMahon at the Survivor Series trying to relate to the children, to the young people, to the kids. And how does he do that? Does he do that by presenting a celebrity that maybe they respond to? Did he bring out the guys from Jackass or Bam Margera or whatever else the kids are watching these days, those crazy kids? No! That costs money. Vince McMahon didn't do that. Vince McMahon didn't bring out anything that kids could relate to or kids can know about. What did Vince McMahon do? Well, Vince McMahon did the one thing that we all do when we're trying to get the kids to relate to us. He used the term nigga. Exactly. Yeah, guys, number 5 moment of insanity was Vince McMahon at the Survivor Series. turning around to John Cena and calling him his nigga. Now, in case you missed the Survivor Series because, well, you don't like to pay for crap, WWE had a little skit backstage where Uncle Eric Bischoff, who was all nervous about his battle that night with SmackDown General Manager Theodore Long, was confronted by Vince McMahon in the hallway area, and Vince was talking to him, and the two of them were going back and forth, and blah, 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 and blah, 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 and you're going to go into your match, and blah, 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 talking back and forth. And again, it was that classic skit that WWE loves to do, where one of the bad guys is, you know, talking all his trash, and the guy he's talking about is standing right behind him. Happens all the time. A little cliched. WWE seems to like it, so we don't call on it too much. But what WWE did was they had John Cena behind Eric Bischoff. And, of course, Eric couldn't see him because, well, that's his catchphrase, and because he was standing behind Eric, and Eric couldn't see behind him. So Eric turns around, and there's John Cena, and, oh, no, look, it's John Cena, and that whole thing. So after that, Vince McMahon starts, you know, talking a little bit with John, and they're going back and forth, talking street. Yo, what up, Vinnie Mac? What up, John? And as Vince McMahon walks away, he goes, my nigga. He walks away. So Booker T and his lovely wife are standing there, and they watch Vince McMahon walk away. And Booker goes, tell me he didn't just say that. And that was it. It was everything except for the bada boom ching. In fact, hopefully we can add that in a little bit. There it is. All right, cool. So WWE, yeah, really wanted to cause some waves, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, it was the kind of thing where this is one of those moments of insanity that, unlike a lot of the other ones that are going to be on this list, it wasn't insane in the sense that it was necessarily bad, necessarily good. It was just insane. Sometimes insane is just insane. So no one really saw it coming. No one knew where it came from. No one knew why Vince McMahon would have to call anybody his nigga at the Survivor Series, but he did. It was Vince McMahon's way of trying to really relate to the youngins and try to give kind of a more of a hip outlook on WWE and what he does. And I said it at the time that it happened. I'll say it now. Yeah, I think it's a big picture problem. This isn't the kind of little thing where the problem wasn't that Vince McMahon said nigga. And keep in mind, too, he didn't say it nigger, because it's another thing that people jump on. I said this originally when we brought it up, too. Vince didn't say it in necessarily a racist sense. Actually, I think he used the terminology that he used on purpose for that reason, because I think to him it was a loophole where he could turn around and say, you know, well, in pop culture, you know, nigger is, you know, not necessarily black people, you know. Whatever. I mean, whatever works for you, Vince. Luckily for Vince, no one in mainstream is watching Survivor Series, so no one gave a shit, so he didn't even have to use that that excuse. Instead, it was just, my nigga, and he was his nigga, and everyone was, you know, all niggered up, and everyone was happy. But yeah, so Vince didn't say it in a racist way. I think he said it in a way that he wanted to imply that he was street, and I think that the issue here is that it's a bigger problem. It's WWE trying to find the things that the kids are into and the hip things and all that. And one thing about WWE, and this is going to sound kind of corny or whatnot, but one of the things I liked about the company the most in the late 90s was that they didn't try to adapt to the curve. Nah, they made the curve. They were what was in. Steve Austin, The Rock, and do you smell what The Rock is cooking? I mean, things like that weren't based on anything real. They weren't based on things that you saw on MTV. They weren't based on things that the young people were doing or saying. WWE is actually creating the pop culture instead of following it. Now they're following it. Not only are they following it, but they're following it poorly. It's Vince McMahon basing, you know, his point of reference as to what pop culture is into and isn't based on people who basically tell him what he wants to hear, and also based on people who live in, and I hate using the term, but it's true, the wrestling bubble. One of the things about Vince McMahon is that Vince McMahon came up until he was about 17, 18 years old without having anything to do with the wrestling business. You know, the guy lived in Nashville, lived with his mom, didn't do anything with his dad, Vince Sr. It wasn't until he became older that he popped up and said, oh, you know, I'll promote, and he promoted the Evel Knievel special and all that stuff. So Vince McMahon had a good 18 years to base his experience on before getting into wrestling. And I definitely think that's one of the reasons why when his company exploded in the mid-80s, a lot of that could be really credited to Vince McMahon, because Vince McMahon had that solid base and had an understanding of people and did sales, man, door-to-door with vacuum cleaners. I mean, say what you want about, you know, his mental state and his sense of humor. But, you know, Vince McMahon busted his ass before he became a wrestling promoter. So he went door-to-door, he sold vacuum cleaners. And when you do sales, you have to know people. So by the time Vince McMahon was promoting wrestling, Vince McMahon knew people. He was able to base a lot of his early work around things that he learned about people. Now, who are the people that are really in creative control of the shows? His children, who, for the duration of their lives, have grown up with Andre the Giant in their back fucking yard holding them up on the swing set. I mean, you tell me what kind of real-life stuff that is. So, of course, WWE is hitting problems where a lot of people who are in control now don't have that point of reference. Never had to do things like real direct door-to-door sales type of stuff. I mean, I hate to jump all over, but Stephanie McMahon always said, I remember, I think she was on Howard Stern, she said it too, one of the reasons why she has her position in WWE is because her dad put her to work. She was answering phone calls at Titan Tower when she was 14. Well, that is menial labor, Stephanie. I'm glad you did it. They were calling Titan Tower, so still in the wrestling bubble, honey. Nah, still not out of it yet. So I think that's one of the problems that WWE has hit. As Vince has gotten older, gotten more settled in, kind of removed himself from mainstream life, I guess, we now have to rely on his kids. And his kids really have no point of reference other than their dad and the life that they've given. So at the end of the day, what I'm really trying to say, guys, is no outside influences, okay, plus growing up in the wrestling industry equals nigga. So there you have it, guys. Moment of insanity, number 5. Vince McMahon calling it John Cena his nigga. Yeah, that's great. No reader rants on this. We just did the reader rants on this a little while ago. So what we're going to do, we're going to move right from number 5. And what comes after 5? 6 comes after 5, but we're not going in that order. So we're going to go to number 4. Let's cue it up. Number 4, moment of insanity. Take it away.
Number 4.
In case you haven't figured it out, number 4, moment of insanity for 2005, Muhammad Hassan being jetted off of WWE programming and not care of Vince McMahon and doing the right thing, but care of UPN,
the
channel famous for shows like The Mullets, a station that actually gave the go-ahead on a TV program called The Mullets, about a family with mullets who do white trash things, which is supposed to be a comedy, a sitcom. The station that agreed to air that show told WWE, hold up, Vince, just a bit too below brow for us. Yeah, in case you guys missed most of the year, you missed the fact that World Wrestling Entertainment introduced a character by the name of Muhammad Hassan, managed by Daivari, still wrestling in WWE. Muhammad Hassan, an Italian wrestler by the name of Mark Capani, playing the role of an Arab-American. That's the difference here, guys. Wasn't Nikolai Volkov, wasn't the Iron Sheik. A lot of people wanted to throw that around when he first debuted and said, well, the Iron Sheik is just like Muhammad Hassan. He hated America. He would spit and go, America, help me, and all that stuff, and that was great. One small difference was that the Iron Sheik would come to the ring with the big Iranian flag, and he would, you know, wear his headdress, salute. For a while, they actually had the Ayatollah Khomeini on the flag right there, too. I mean, a lot of things just to drum up nationalism. Muhammad Hassan wasn't the Iron Sheik. Muhammad Hassan wasn't foreign. Muhammad Hassan was an Arab-American. That was the gimmick. He was from Detroit. Detroit. I mean, we love Detroit. It's the Motor City, you know? Steiner Brothers. PN News. Muhammad Hassan. A lot of people really didn't grasp the concept of this character when he first debuted. Well, when it first debuted, there were vignettes from Muhammad Hassan, and he came out, and they would play the music. And Muhammad Hassan's whole thing was that he wasn't foreign. He was born here, you know? He was an American citizen, but ever since 9/11, that was his big thing, ever since 9/11, Well, ever since 9/11, it turns out that Muhammad Hassan was discriminated against, as have been many Arab Americans, and it was a real, genuine situation that WWE was playing with here. They were playing with something that has affected the lives negatively of many, many Americans following September 11th. Arab Americans, people, anybody who even looks Middle Eastern, to a lot of people who are, you know, inherently, you know, racist or perhaps had a personal, you know, situation arise from 9/11. I mean, you have to remember, this is a situation that didn't happen 50 years ago. This isn't like the 80s where wrestlers would come out and they go, what a Pearl Harbor job that was. People like to bring that up too. Well, they say Pearl Harbor job a lot when a wrestler will attack another wrestler from behind. Yeah, they say Pearl Harbor job a lot. That was like 60 years ago. So, you know, I guess the statute of limitations on really offending people is off. I mean, at this point, if you haven't gotten over, you know, a loved one who passed away in Pearl Harbor, I mean, it's been a while, so I mean, you've had time to kind of deal with it. September 11th was 4 years ago. Many of us remember where we were on September 11th. I mean, you better remember where you were on September 11th. If not, then, you know, cut down on the drinking. But, I mean, it's a fairly recent thing that a lot of people were affected by, obviously. New York, I mean, I live in New York, so, I mean, I've seen people firsthand affected by this. You know, I've been affected by this. A lot of people have been affected by this. So it is a touchy subject. So WWE debuts Muhammad Hassan. They put him on the pre-taped video packages. Now, the thing with Muhammad, and this is what cracked me up in the beginning, was that WWE and a lot of people were saying, well, this isn't going to be a heel. Muhammad Hassan isn't going to be a heel. You know, his whole gimmick is that he's discriminated against. This is a sophisticated, complex character that WWE is introducing. Well, yeah, no. I mean, we knew from day one what this was going to end up being, and it was what it ended up being. Muhammad Hassan was a good person. He was an Arab American. But ever since 9/11, he was discriminated against by WWE and by the fans and people like that. So, of course, as we all know, every Arab American, even if good at base, will eventually become evil terrorists because, you know, that's how they are. Yeah, I mean, that's the moral you were really supposed to take away from this wonderful angle. Muhammad Hassan, I mean, that's what made it really a horrible, horrible thing. Muhammad Hassan didn't debut as the Iron Sheik. If Muhammad Hassan debuted as the Iron Sheik, it wouldn't have caused that much of a problem. I mean, think about it. Sergeant Slaughter, there were some issues in 91 when he popped up as the Iraqi sympathizer, but people really didn't go buck silly. For the most part, they had to move WrestleMania 7 because of the bomb scare, you know, not because of low ticket sales. So they moved WrestleMania 7 out of the way. But for the most part, no one made them take Sergeant Slaughter off of television. I mean, this is a guy, he was on Superstars of Wrestling and things like that. One of the reasons why they didn't was because Sergeant Slaughter was playing a tongue-in-cheek character. Sergeant Slaughter was playing an American turncoat. He was managed by a guy who was supposed to be Iraqi. He was doing stupid things. He was setting Hulk Hogan's poster on fire and things like that. Muhammad Hassan was a little bit different. Muhammad Hassan was there, and he was actually taking on an entire race of people in the United States, playing the role, playing a character really that's supposed to be based on them and the prejudice that they encounter every day. So here's this guy, Muhammad Hassan, playing the role, eventually turning into an evil, right, wait for it, terrorist, because he's mad that he's been portrayed as a terrorist. Yeah, that's the gimmick. So take that for what you will, guys. You know, at its heart, it's a very racist, it's a very, I don't know, closed-minded, narrow-minded, kind of, I live in a bubble, I don't know anybody of Arab American descent, so let me grab this Italian guy and make him play the villain that we're all afraid of type of gimmick. WWE also realizing, pretending like they don't realize, as they always do, that their audience won't get it. That was my favorite thing, was that Muhammad Hassan first debuted and people said, well, he's not really a heel, he's not really a babyface, he's very sophisticated, you know. And then you have people in the audience holding up signs, 7-Eleven is hiring, and WWE showing it on television, trying to sell us on the sophistication of the entire gimmick, when really, at its base, it was there to appeal to the racist fans, to appeal to the people who didn't like Arab Americans, so they can go out there and they can have somebody built in and ready to boo. I mean, make no mistake about it, wrestling is about that. Wrestling is about finding the most evil, vile thing you can, at least in your head, and making people boo it. The boogeyman is based on the devil. you know? I mean, eating the worms and doing all the devilish things, and people boo evil things, so they made him into a character. Iron Sheik, Nikolai Volkov, we talked about it before. WWE looks for anything that they feel is evil, and that's what they make evil. So Muhammad Hassan was evil. Again, though, not really a big deal. Distasteful, yeah. Was it something that you or I would do? Maybe you or I would book? Probably not. But they did it, and it's all good. So things moved on. Now, WWE then decided to shoot an angle. This angle was going to be a controversial angle. I mean, they knew that before it aired. Timing, regardless. In July of this year, WWE shot an angle where Muhammad Hassan, now on SmackDown, was feuding with The Undertaker. And he decided to have his manager, Daivari, fight The Undertaker. Kind of sacrificing him, in a way. Undertaker beat Daivari, and a bunch of guys in hoods came out and attacked The Undertaker. Carried out Daivari as if he were a martyr. Okay? Keep following me here. At the end, they wrap wires around The Undertaker's neck, and they try to choke him. And it was very similar, and if you haven't seen any pictures or anything like that of it, of the beheadings that were going on at the time. I mean, again, I can't believe I'm saying this. The beheadings that were going on at the time overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan. Very similar. You know, very small piece of wire, except, and of course, when they do the real beheadings, they pull the wire straight through the neck and tear the head right off. WWE didn't do that, thankfully, because, you know, they have The Undertaker under contract for the next 80 years, so you don't want to lose his head at any point like that. And plus, you know, I mean, we're just parodying beheadings. We're not doing real beheadings. Let's not get crazy here. So, yeah, they do that whole thing. Now, keep in mind, this would have been controversial no matter what. People probably would have talked about it, would have gotten a reaction. But again, it would have gotten the wrestling reaction. And you ran into this a lot, especially when Muhammad Hassan was out. You ran into debate. And I always found, in wrestling, I mean, there's always going to be debate. Even if a subject is black and white, really, and there isn't too much wiggle room, you're always going to have to debate on it. Because people feel very strongly about it. In wrestling, we're kind of taught that. We're taught to question things and look at it from every angle. So we do that. So people are debating back and forth, you know, around the time when the angle was shot. Now, for those of you guys who read the SmackDown spoilers, you know SmackDown is aired a few days after it's taped. So WWE shoots this angle. It's going to be offensive enough. People are debating whether or not, you know, Muhammad Hassan isn't a terrorist. Muhammad Hassan is just like the Iron Sheik. You know, things like that were all popping up in arguments like that. So Thursday rolled around, and WWE was ready to go with their airing of SmackDown that featured the beheading angle that everybody knew was going to be the controversial angle. Well, goddamn the luck of Vince McMahon. Why do bad things always happen to him and his family? The London bombings happened that morning. Poor Vince. That morning, London bombings happened in the subways of London, and it was a pretty big situation. I mean, for people in London, for people just watching the news, I mean, you don't like to hear about things like that. I don't care if you're Republican or a Democrat or whatever the hell, you know, you play with your political games. Nobody likes to see people killed. You know, I mean, it's never good news to hear. So obviously everybody was somber about it. Even if you didn't know anybody in England, it still was, a big thing. Like, these people were just going to work in the morning. They were on the subway. Just a real messed up thing to have happen, that they would bomb the London subways. The irony of it was that was the same day WWE was supposed to be airing the famous beheading angle. Now, remember at the time when I talked about this during the moment of insanity, I said what I felt. And it's something that I do discuss in the book coming out too, World Wrestling Insanity, now available at Amazon.com. WWE could have just went out there. The beginning of their show was a pre-taped show, you know. I mean, and the bombings happened in the morning. The show aired at like 8 p.m. WWE had a full day to really edit that out. And before you turn around and tell me, you know, they didn't have time to edit it out, I mean, that's bullshit. WWE has edited Raw and SmackDown up until right before. I mean, they had plenty of time to edit it. And proof positive that they had time to edit it, when the show eventually did go on the air, WWE aired a scrolling graphic at the bottom of the screen that said, you know, due to the sensitive nature of today's show, parental discretion is advised. It should have been any discretion is advised, because it had really nothing to do with children or anything like that. It was just a really distasteful piece of TV that was coming on at a bad time. And WWE aired the beheading angle on the day of the terrorist bombings of London. Just freaking amazing. to me at least, I couldn't see, when I first heard about the bombings and all that stuff, I couldn't see WWE actually airing that, and they did. They aired it with a graphic on the bottom, and the scrolling graphic proved that they had time to edit the footage before it was going to be sent to UPN. All that aside, WWE, all they had to do, and all Vince McMahon had to do, was start off SmackDown with a two-minute video of him talking, saying that World Wrestling Entertainment is there for entertainment. They understand the severity of real-world issues. You know, something was shot at the SmackDown tapings that was supposed to air tonight. However, WWE feels that in light of the London bombings or some bullshit, anything that would just basically say that WWE recognizes how real the situation is and does not want to exploit it for TV ratings. And I'm going to be 100% honest with you guys. If Vince McMahon had done that and they had pulled that angle off of TV, and WWE, we got a lot more respect from its fans, from mainstream fans, from people outside the company, really looking at them and saying, you know, at least they did the right thing. They understood what the big deal was, and they didn't go with it. No, WWE just aired it. And as a result, UPN made SmackDown, made WWE essentially take Muhammad Hassan off of SmackDown. There were rumors WWE was going to jump him over to Raw, the whole nine yards. No, UPN, the station with the mullets, the station with Blind Date, told WWE that Muhammad Hassan was too distasteful for their television channel. There you go. WWE ended up killing Hassan thanks to The Undertaker on pay-per-view at the Great American Bash. And that was the end of Marco Pani. And that was the number four moment of insanity. I don't know, guys. I think the funniest thing about this whole angle, and I said earlier, wrestling fans like to debate and go back and forth. Mainstream doesn't debate things that are really black and white. I mean, there's certain things that, you know, they're on the cusp and you have debates about it, but I got news for you. When it got picked up by the news stations, and everybody was talking about WWE and this character that they had to get pulled off of TV, there was no one on Fox News or MSNBC who was saying that it was a sophisticated angle or a character that we really didn't understand. No, they called him a terrorist. WWE had this terrorist character on UPN SmackDown. WWE simulating beheadings in London. And there was no... And you know what was funny? All the debate stopped. All the debate stopped. And all the wrestling fans who were trying to tell us that the angle wasn't supposed to be a beheading really didn't have anything to say. Because you know what? An outside source, an outside eye looking in, seeing this angle for what it truly was, not in the wrestling bubble of trying to debate within ourselves as to what is what. They said it point blank. This is terrorism. It's a terrorist angle. And the debate stops because you know what, guys? It was. It was a terrorist angle. So there you have it. The number four moment of insanity. Muhammad Hassan and his terrorist angle getting pulled off of television.
Get the hell out of here!
Number three.
Why is he sitting in Eddie's car? What is... Oh, what the hell's going on?
I have no idea.
We were out on a date in my daddy's car. We had been driven along very far. There in the rush, straight ahead. A car was stalled, the engine was spinning. I couldn't stop, so I swerved to the right. I'll never forget the sound that...
Oof, watch the falling glass, because number three's moment of insanity, 2005, is the lowrider incident. In case you don't know what the lowrider incident is, well, you're not paying attention. In November of this year, World Wrestling Entertainment suffered a loss. Actually, we all did. When Eddie Guerrero, Latino Heat, passed away tragically at a young age, unexpectedly. Eddie Guerrero was on the path to win the world title for a second time at SmackDown against Randy Orton. And WWE, on the way to that show that morning, learned of the death of Eddie. And it became a kind of a big issue. They had an entire tribute show for him on Monday Night Raw, the likes of which hasn't been seen since the Owen Hart tribute edition of Raw. So WWE really went out of their way to present a respectful an honorable show to make the fans, many of whom might not have dealt with death in the past, comfortable with the situation, or at least help them get through the grief. Not all of us have the same lives. Some of us have dealt with death a lot. Some of us have never dealt with death. So for many people, the loss of Eddie Guerrero was one of the first times where somebody that they really felt a connection to passed away. And as I said at the time when it happened, in professional wrestling, the idea is to make your audience connect to your characters. So of course when something tragic happens to one of them, it is going to affect your fans, because if you've done your job even half correctly, they're going to have some sort of emotional attachment to that person, not just on a level of an entertainer. And that's one thing that everybody has to understand. People turn around and go, well, you know, he was a wrestler, and, you know, they didn't know him. You know, people didn't know Eddie Guerrero. Well, that's the deal. Promoters and wrestling promotions are supposed to make you know that person and know that character. In many cases, you just know the character. You just know the boogeyman. You just know Doink the Clown. But you don't know the guy playing that character. With Eddie, his character was based a lot on his real life. So fans got to know about him and his family, and they watched the videos and the DVDs or whatnot. So there was a strong attachment that people had to Eddie. So Eddie passed away on November 13th. Tragically, WWE does their whole memorial edition of Raw and SmackDown to try to get fans to feel better. So that was great. Now, a lot of fans felt at the time, thank you, WWE. Thank you for doing this for us. Thank you for helping us feel better. We appreciate it. And a lot of people thought WWE understood the point here. Of course, people are going to tune in droves to watch the Eddie Guerrero tribute. You know why? Because people care about Eddie Guerrero. They don't necessarily care about some of the horrendously horrible storylines that have been spun on Raw as much as they care about the death of a wrestler they care about, obviously. WWE, though, doesn't see it as that. With their narrow-minded tunnel vision, they see the rating numbers. And they see people really liked Eddie Guerrero. I mean, they knew that because Eddie Guerrero is one of the more popular wrestlers, but they didn't see it for what it was, which essentially was that fans weren't tuning in for wrestling, they were tuning in for real life. But instead, what WWE did, well, they had a SmackDown special. It was already scheduled for about 2.5 weeks later, live edition. And the match was Rey Mysterio Jr., WWE's resident midget, taking on Big Show, WWE's resident, as, well, Triple H called him last night, Circus Sideshow Freak, 7 feet tall, huge-ass guy. So, Rey Mysterio and Big Show stepping in there for their match. Now, WWE decides that, well, fans like Eddie Guerrero, so what better way to have them cheer for Rey Mysterio than to have him dedicate this match to Eddie Guerrero? Granted, just happened 2.5 weeks earlier when he died. Kind of a little bit too soon. Bad taste, I would say. But at least the idea can be presented that WWE did it at first thinking, you know, oh, it's a tribute. You know, when I first saw Rey Mysterio come out in Eddie Guerrero's Lowrider to Eddie Guerrero's theme song, I got that feeling in my stomach, that kind of sick feeling of, oh, no, what are they doing? What are they doing? But he came out in the Lowrider, and you try to convince yourself when you see things like that. You go, all right, look, WWE is just, they're not like regular people. They don't really understand, you know, certain things. But that's fine. In their own messed up, skewed way, this is their way of paying tribute to Eddie, I guess, or whatnot. So they do that. They have Rey Mysterio come out. Now, as the match goes on, Rey Mysterio is getting beat up by the Big Show, and he's on the ground looking up at the sky and calling out Eddie Guerrero's name. That, too, made me a little bit ill. But, I mean, it's all good. Big Show then brings Rey out, power bombs him on the Lowrider. Now you're getting to the point where you're like, Jesus, how much further is this going to go on? And just when you can't figure out how much further this can go on, Randy Orton and The Undertaker come out. Randy puts Undertaker in the car, backs it up into the stage, slams it, and it goes up in flames. So there you have it. Less than the same calendar month of Eddie's death, WWE set his Lowrider on fire on SmackDown and couldn't figure out why anyone was pissed. All right, let's break this down slowly, okay, shall we? First and foremost, let's use WWE and many people's reasoning for why people shouldn't have been offended.
They didn't do anything to Eddie. It was just his lowrider. It was just, you know, that wasn't Eddie. It was just a stupid car.
Well, it was the same stupid car that they used as the icon of Eddie's life on the Memorial Edition of Raw 2.5 weeks earlier. So it was just some bullshit stupid car. Then they shouldn't have had it out on the stage when all the wrestlers were crying. But they did because it represents Eddie Guerrero. You can't turn around 2 weeks later and go, well, wait, it doesn't represent Eddie Guerrero. Bullshit. It was Eddie Guerrero's thing. It was his car. What makes this thing a little bit worse, at least in my opinion, is that I can actually hear the conversation in my head of somebody at the boardroom going, Mr. McMahon, we have like three of these goddamn lowriders in the warehouse. Could we get rid of them somehow? Let's set them on fire! Ha ha ha! And then everyone's happy. So WWE goes out and they set the lowrider on fire. Still can't figure out why anybody's pissed. Now, also keep in mind, too, and this is the other humor of it, Big Show is a babyface on Raw. Raw aired on Monday. Tuesday was SmackDown, and now he's the bad guy beating up the midget who is crying for his friend who passed away. And WWE is like, they're still trying to figure out why people don't latch onto their characters anymore. I don't know, maybe because when you're in the same week making somebody the top babyface fighting Triple H on Monday and then disrespecting the memory of, you know, a deceased wrestler on Tuesday, it's a little strange, at least in my opinion. Also, keep this in mind, too. WWE didn't necessarily disrespect the Guerrero family. And that's one thing to point out. So everybody, well, how is this disrespectful to Eddie? Well, it's not disrespectful to Eddie. I mean, in a way, it is a little weird to use his real-life death to sell a match. I think that's a little, that in and of itself is disrespectful. The fact that Eddie is still gone and they're still using his name to make money. But whatever, I mean, it's life, everyone makes money. What was disrespectful about it was that fans had grief. And as we said earlier with the WWE show, fans had to express that grief, and they had to get it out, and they had to find an outlet for it. And WWE presented that outlet, and they let fans feel bad and kind of, you know, deal with what they had to deal with. And then less than a month later, they exploited that grief to sell a shitty match. And I think that was a disrespectful part of it. On that Monday, and I'll be straight up with you guys, I felt good to be a wrestling fan, to watch Vince McMahon and the company really put forth a show. I mean, granted, there were some little things about the Guerrero tribute show that I wasn't too into. There was Joey Styles screaming his way through commentary. I think the commentary is totally whacked on the show anyway. Little things like that. Whatever. The thing that annoyed me was the exploitation of the fans' grief. And it was the fact that people who watched the Raw Memorial and the SmackDown Memorial and genuinely felt like WWE, for once, had put the feelings and emotions of the fans ahead of their own pocketbook, had gone back 2.5 weeks later and just gone and done a 180. And it was almost a slap in the face to anybody who really cared about World Wrestling Entertainment and the way that they handled the situation. Just disgusting on so many levels. And the kicker to all this, the ironic footnote to the entire situation was that WWE still, even after everything was over, did not understand what the situation was. And how can I say that? Well, WWE, and one of the most ridiculous things ever, goes on Bite This. And on the front of their website has a little thing, you know, do you have a problem with the SmackDown lowrider thing? Well, Chavo Guerrero does it. Let's hear what Kerwin Chavito White has to say about the situation. And they bring out Chavo Guerrero, whose checks are signed right off of I-95 in Stamford at Titan Tower to talk about why WWE wasn't wrong in what they did. Are you kidding me? The guy works for the McMahon family, but let me do you one better. And, you know, I mean, I have nothing against Chavo Guerrero. Obviously, the guy went through his own thing. But you know what? It has nothing to do with what Chavo thinks. If WWE went on TV and disrespected the name of the Guerrero family, disrespected Eddie directly, had Big Show come out and talk crap about Eddie's life, cut down Eddie's wife and kids or whatever, then you could bring Chavo out and say, you know, hey, I never had a problem with, you know, anything that they said about Eddie. It's not a big deal. If it's all white, it's all right, you know, and just leave it at that. No. It's not about Chavo's feelings. No one offended Chavo. No one tried to exploit Chavo's grief to make it buck. It was the fans. The fans are the ones who were exploited to make a buck. So it doesn't matter if Chavo didn't have a problem with it, if the Guerrero family didn't have a problem with it, if anybody else had a problem with it. It had to do with the fans, and it had to do with your grief. And if the fans were offended, then that was the end of it, and that's really all that mattered. And I personally, if I was somebody who really put my heart and soul into that Monday Night Memorial Raw, and then 2.5 weeks later dealt with what WWE put on that screen, I would be offended. And I think the fans had a right to be. And the sad situation, again, and I think that this is a sign of a bigger picture problem that has always existed in WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment not only did this act, but didn't even understand why it was wrong. And that, to me, I think speaks volumes on the company and the things that they do. But so it goes. So yeah, number three, the Lowrider incident. Eddie Guerrero, Undertaker, Randy Orton, that whole insanity. Randy Orton blowing up the Undertaker in the car, and just, yeah. If we could go back, and we had a lot of crazy stuff this year, but there's one thing that I really think that wish we could go back and erase, that is definitely one of them. So number three, Eddie Guerrero's Lowrider being set ablaze less than a month after his passing on WWE SmackDown. How's that for class, folks? Some sophisticated stuff right there. Now, you know what? If you think that's pretty insane and pretty crazy, well, I got something else for you to listen to. It's the number two moment of insanity, and folks, fear is only a four-letter word. Number two moment of insanity. Roll it!
Number two.
What do you mean you're dumping me?
God, I just can't take all the lying and cheating on each other anymore.
Stop. What are you talking about, sweetie? I never cheated on you.
I know. That's what makes this so hard.
You think you know me.
Well, somebody told me you had a boyfriend. He looked like a girlfriend. Then I had him back. You wear it your last year. It's not confidential. I've got potential.
Matt. Yeah, guys, in case you haven't figured it out, the number two moment of insanity is the bizarre love triangle between Matt Hardy, Edge, and Lita. And here's the irony of this, guys. Last year, one of the top five moments of insanity, which you can actually find right now, for those of you listening to this, if you go to worldwrestlinginsanity.com, if you happen to access this from an outside link, and you go to the audio page, we have last year's top five moments of insanity listed on the page. And one of those things of last year's top five was the Lita Kane Snitsky situation. Well, this year it is Lita, Matt Hardy, and Edge, his situation, which kind of blends with the Kane situation. Now, let me just bring you all up to speed on this. Lita, Amy Dumas, was playing a role on WWE's Monday Night Raw, where she was married to the big red machine, Kane. If you're not too familiar with Kane's past, you know that Kane is not very lucky with the ladies. He had a little love affair with Tori of the D-Generation X stable. You might remember her. She was Terry Power, big, crispy, curly hair. She always wore the same green shirt. Every day, same green shirt. Must have been a pretty damn smelly shirt. Anyway, Kane was with her. She dumped him for X-Pac. He made out with Marlena. Terry Runnels said freaks were cool. They had that situation. We all know about the lovely Miss Katie Vick, Kane's date, who really wasn't too lively, but at least she was there to enjoy the fun. So, yeah, Kane never really that much of a ladies' man. Well, this was no exception. Kane stole Lita last year from Matt Hardy in a match. They had it at SummerSlam, and he won Lita and ended up marrying her. It became this great, great angle. Stupid. Very stupid. The whole thing was dumb on a number of levels, and one of the reasons why it was dumb on a number of levels was that baby faces and heels switched back and forth, and I used to complain about this all the time. It made no sense. Like, Kane basically forced sex upon Lita, then forced marriage upon her, and now she liked him, and he was a good guy. None of that made sense to me, and I always thought in wrestling, you need to have heroes and villains well-defined. You need to have their actions make them heroes and villains. You can't have their actions be opposite of what you expect the fans to do. You can't have a rapist get cheered. It really doesn't work that well. In hindsight, when I used to tell people that was my biggest pet peeve about pro wrestling. I actually should have said it was my second biggest pet peeve, because WWE made sure to take this angle and make it even worse. And what's worse than having poorly defined baby faces and heels? Well, stepping out of the fantasy world of wrestling on television and telling people what goes on behind the curtain, I think that's a lot worse. And WWE did that. All right, let me give you guys up to speed in case you don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Lita's playing this role on TV. She's married to the big red machine, Kane. And then in real life, she's still with Matt Hardy, version 1, the guy who lost her at SummerSlam. Yeah, Matt's on SmackDown. Matt's doing nothing, as he usually does. Well, all of a sudden, something weird happens. And Matt's website, which he loves, Matt loves the World Wide Web, Matt pulls her off of his website. I don't mean physically pulls her. I mean, he has his webmaster take down any pictures of Amy off his website, which would have been nothing, but he kind of acknowledged it on the site and said, you know, I told my webmaster to take down pictures of Amy. So, you know, all of a sudden now people, what the hell? Why did he take down pictures of Amy? It doesn't make any sense. Well, Shane Helms, Gregory Helms, Hurricane Helms, decides to go on there and stir the pot up a little bit more going on his website. I mean, this is ridiculous, you know. I even go on my website and talk about you on my website, and then you talk about you on your website. Yeah, Shane Helms jumps on his website, and he starts talking about loyalty, and being loyal, and not betraying somebody to trust. And, you know, of course, what does everybody think of? Everyone's thinking that Amy's going out, and she's doing, you know, the boom-boom dance with somebody. Somebody is getting a piece of her Dumas. So now all the rumors part up. Who is it, you know, who's the one who's dangling Miss Congeniality? Turns out it's Edge. It's Adam Copeland. Current wrestler for WWE, already on the payroll, wrestling on Raw. So, how does WWE deal with this? I mean, here you go. You got a guy on Raw. He's nailing another woman on the show who's dating another guy that's on the payroll. So how do you fix that? Well, why don't you dump the guy she's dating? How's that? That would be great. Could you imagine if you worked in, I don't care where you, if you worked at JCPenney and you were dating the girl in shoes for 2 years, and then all of a sudden the guy in appliances started getting a piece of her and you got fired for it? Kind of weird, but that's what happened. Now, I understood at the time why Matt Hardy got fired. Matt Hardy went on the internet, told the whole story about Amy and Edge and the whole thing. And you have to remember, Edge was playing a babyface at the time, as was Lita. The two of them were playing good guys on Monday Night Raw. So, for Matt Hardy to go out there and tell all the fans the true story about what happened with Amy, what happened with, you know, Edge. He called Edge a feces. That was his other thing, too. Matt Hardy, one of his tirades. Going off, calling Edge a feces, which I don't think I've ever called anybody a feces in my life. I don't even think I've ever really used the term feces unless I'm being sarcastic about something. I mean, it's not really a guy thing to say, but Matt Hardy, the man's man, he's a man, decided to call Edge a feces. So he did that too. So WWE fired him. Now you have to remember, WWE's job is to make money off of their performers. Lita, Edge, they were good guys. They were money makers, and the job is to get the fans to like them. Matt Hardy, by going on his website and telling everybody the full story about what happened with Amy and Adam Copeland, really did WWE a disservice by doing that. You know, it was pretty much just trying to cut out the company's legs from under them by taking away two of their top stars and telling people the true story about why they shouldn't be cheered. Two people that WWE wanted their fans to cheer, and here's Matt Hardy telling them why they shouldn't cheer for him. So WWE fired him, and people were pissed, but in all honesty, WWE fires fucking everybody, man. It has nothing to do with who you're dating. I mean, this is the same company that fired Dawn Marie while she was pregnant. Fired Charlie Haas and Jackie Gaeta right after their wedding on the same day. Fired Jazz and Rodney Mack, married couples, on the same day. People are like, they had no right to fire Matt Hardy. I'm thinking, Matt Hardy is the closest they ever had to having a right to fire anybody. So they can Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy's gone. Let the onslaught begin. Whining and everything all online. I hate to say whining because, you know what, I don't know how the guy felt, especially at the time. Because this story takes a bit of a twist. I remember at the time, I thought to myself, okay, this sucks. I understand WWE's positioning on all this. I understood that they had to get rid of Matt. You know, Matt really screwed them. Matt tried to get people to boo Amy and Edge. So that made sense to me. I also kind of felt bad for Matt Hardy a little bit. You know, I mean, the guy did lose his whole life. Then he got fired. So, of course, he was trying to make the most of it. You know, going to Ring of Honor, doing his thing, trying to get the reactions he could still get online from people, telling his side of the story. So yeah, I mean, he still had to feel bad, because this obviously was a thing for him, a really big thing in his life. Granted, I don't know if I would have splashed my personal life all over the internet, but that's Matt's thing. I mean, he does that. I don't really go too deep into my personal things online. It's just something that some people do. Some people don't. Matt Hardy's one of the people who do. So he did that. He went out and just kind of told everybody everything. All the secrets were gone. Just here's my life, right here on the table. That's what you got. Yeah, it all came out. So some people felt bad for him. Some people thought that he had really been the victim of something not very cool. So what happened? Well, WWE fans started chanting, "You screwed Matt," at Edge and Lita, and all different events all around the country. So what did WWE do? Well, they turned Edge heel, and they put him with Lita, and guess what? It took off. So now you have Matt Hardy helping the guy who stole his girlfriend and his ex-girlfriend to rise and become two of the top heels of Monday Night Raw. Irony? Yeah, a lot of irony. Edge probably wouldn't have made too much money as a babyface. Always kind of had a... kind of weirded me out a little bit as a baby face. He would smile a lot, but he had this big, toothy grin that was kind of scary. So as a heel, kind of works, very arrogant. So WWE made him kind of a slimy, dirty, gigolo type of Canadian character. That became Edge's gimmick. Thanks to the fact that he banged Matt Hardy's girlfriend. So yeah, so Edge went out, cheated on his wife with Lita, and it became his gimmick. Lita went out and had an indiscretion, so WWE made her an on-air slut. That became her gimmick. Actually had a wedding with Edge and Lita, okay, in the ring. Another one of their famous weddings that had no big ending. And Lita actually said, "If loving you makes me a slut, then I am proud to be the slut of the century." That's what she said. WWE scripted that, and she said it because, God damn it, I guess she needs the job. So she did her thing. WWE made them into characters. Now, here's where the story gets good. WWE brought back Matt Hardy. Now, for anybody who's been watching professional wrestling or World Wrestling Entertainment, more appropriately, for longer than 10 minutes, you know the McMahons don't play certain things. You can call Vince McMahon, "Hold me the clown," because Vinny don't play that. Vinny has issues when it comes to things like people trying to screw him over and trying to put their own character ahead of the company. I mean, it's WWE's company. It's their rules. It's their games. And he don't play around. So they bring him back. And everybody saw this coming. You did not have to be Nostradamus to predict the fact that Matt Hardy was going to go to hell. So WWE brings him back. And they do it in one of the strangest ways. They have Matt Hardy waiting in Vince McMahon's limousine on an episode of Monday Night Raw. Now, I know what you're asking. You're saying, wait a minute, if Matt Hardy's whole character is based on the fact that he's anti-WWE, anti-Edge, anti-Lita, going online and talking all his trash about World Wrestling Entertainment on his website, why would he be in Vince McMahon's limo for his first appearance on Monday Night Raw? Well, you know what? There you go, right there. So Matt Hardy comes out, looked terrible, he looked like the Fat Elvis. He comes out and goes into the ring and delivers a promo that was so bad. Oh my God, so bad. Comes out and says that on TV for the last year, Lita was married to Kane, but she would come home to him at night. So there you have it. Matt Hardy essentially told all the fans that wrestling was fake. Why did he tell them wrestling was fake? Well, he was trying to sell his feud with Edge, which was based on real life. There's only one problem. Wrestling fans know that if they watch a match on TV, it's not real. Even if it's based on real life, it's not real. So I don't know if Matt Hardy was trying to say that You know, well, all that Kane stuff, that was all bullshit. This is for real. Me and Edge. This is a real thing. Really bad promo. But made sure that he ended it on a horrible note when he said that he wished that Edge would get into a car accident and die. Yeah, and didn't get applause for it and couldn't really seem to figure out why. Well, I could figure out why, and I think a lot of us could figure out why. It's the fact that when all this first went down with Matt Hardy and he got fired, we felt bad for him. And I felt bad for him because I thought it was a personal issue in his life. His life had been destroyed. This poor guy, he had no other alternative but to go online and do a reality show called The Matt Hardy Show, where his brother Jeff threw fish at him or some shit, like that weird character from Muppet Show. And weird stuff happened on this show. But I felt bad, and a lot of people felt bad. Poor Matt Hardy. Really, this guy didn't have much, and he lost Lita, and it's very sad. But by returning to WWE to play a role of a character, feuding with the guy who genuinely did this to him, and Lita, the woman who did this to him, really made a lot of people feel that, if he's willing to exploit his personal tragedy for money, maybe it's not that horrible of a thing for him. Kind of weird. So, no one really applauded Edge getting into a car accident. Surprise, surprise. No one was really that shocked by it. But here, it gets even better than that. Prior to that initial debut on Raw, coming out of Vince McMahon's limo, WWE shot a few weekly segments where Matt Hardy would jump out of the audience and attack Adam Copeland at ringside. Obviously fake. I mean, totally fake, straight up fake. We all knew it was fake. Matt Hardy went on his message board and proceeded to tell his fans that it was for real. All these people who felt bad for him, who expressed all their concern after Lita did her thing, Matt Hardy went online and tried to work them. Now, in wrestling, we like to use a lot of fun little terms to kind of cloud the real issue. And we use the term work a lot. Oh, it's a work. He's working you. If you're not really too adept at wrestling terminology, let me just clue you in and use the regular term. Lie. Okay? Let's not clean it up. Matt Hardy went online and lied to his message board people and his fans and his readers and people who had supported him at a time where they felt bad for him. And he lied to them to try to get them to buy into this bullshit feud that he was having on Monday Night Raw. Now, that to me really showed where his loyalties lied. I mean, here you know, you have a group of fans that are going to support you no matter what. And what do? Well, you not only turn your back on what you told them you were going to do, but then you try to use their emotions. And you try to keep it going and keep them upset about things so they'll buy into your feud. I found it to be very distasteful. I thought it was the wrong thing to do. I thought that WWE, by bringing Matt Hardy back, knew exactly what they were doing. They were neutering him. His internet following started to go away slowly. People were pissed. There was a post on his message board, something about nice fake punches, nice this, nice that, really just tearing him apart, and he deserved it. You don't do that. When you have people who do care about you for real, you don't use their emotions like that. Fast forward, fast forward, fast forward. The next week, Edge went on TV, delivered a kick-ass heel promo, tearing Matt Hardy's crappy promo apart, made him look like shit. In their first encounter at SummerSlam, Edge beat him bloody in like 30 seconds. They had a couple of other matches. No one really gave a shit about that because, well, Matt Hardy ended up sucking. And Matt Hardy would do interviews at the time, too. People would say, "Hey, Matt, how can you lose every week?" And Matt would go, "Check with me again in a few months, and we'll see where I am." Well, that was in August, all right? It's December. You know where Matt Hardy is? Nowhere. He's done. Yeah, he's on SmackDown. He loses once in a while. But JBL just kicked his ass. So, yeah, what's the moral of the story here, folks? The moral of the story is this. If you leave WWE under bad circumstances, and you make so much of a stink, and you make so many waves that people turn around and they really still pay attention to you, even though you don't have any national TV coverage, and WWE offers to bring you back, don't go back, you schmuck! There's plenty of books that Matt Hardy should have read. There's actually one coming out in May that... Too bad for him. He should have read it when, you know, before all this happened. But yeah, the moral of the story is, It doesn't matter how good you are at Monopoly. WWE owns the game, so you're pretty screwed. Even if you are winning, even if you are doing quite well and you're collecting a good amount of money, all it really takes is for Vince McMahon to go, this isn't fun, I don't want to play anymore, give me the box. And then you're done, and your game's over. So, Matt Hardy's game is over. Yeah, he can count his money, cry in his beer, and hang out on SmackDown. On a good note, at least he does have a new girlfriend, who is the 2005 Raw Diva Search winner, Ashley. So Matt Hardy, once again, is shitting where he works, if you will, because Matt Hardy doesn't, I guess, learn from his mistakes. So there you have it, guys. Matt Hardy, Edge, and Lita, and their love triangle is this year's number two. Moment of insanity, and goddamn right, it's the moment of insanity. So, yeah, I guess without further ado, it's time. It's time for the big one. It is time for El Numero Uno. Yeah, so without further ado, you guys, it's 2005's Moment of Insanity. Let's cue it up and hear what you voted for.
Music, lights, hot dog.
We don't care and it shows. Woo! That's it. Mr. Barber Beefcake, what are you doing?
As voted by the readers of
WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
It's 2005's
Moment. Oh, it is Saturday.
Hey, what happened?
All right, JR. Time for your colon surgery, and everyone on that, I'm Dr. Heine. I want you to meet Nurse Rocker Knockers.
Take your records, take your freedom. Take your memories, I don't need them. Take your space and take your reasons, but you'll think of me. Take your cat and leave my sweater, 'cause we have nothing left to weather. In fact, I feel a whole lot better. But you think of me, you think of me.
There you have it, guys. Did you figure it out yet? And that's right. This year, 2005's Moment of Insanity, number one, goes to the debacle that was Jim Ross's firing from Monday Night Raw and subsequent Dr. Heine skit, subsequent replacement by Joey Styles, the heel turn of Linda McMahon, and all the other crazy, crazy stuff that went into Monday Night Raw's announcing situation debacle this year. And guys, I don't even know where to begin. I don't know how far back we have to begin. I don't know at what point we would even begin telling the story of this moment in insanity. I feel like we can go back to, you know, it was, the year was 1323. I was sailing on the ocean. I mean, honest to God, this is the kind of thing that has been going on for years and years and years. Jim Ross, good old JR, a staple of the announcing table for not only Monday Night Raw, but WCW, the UWF. The guy has been up and down the pike for years and is regarded as one of the better announcers in wrestling, and you really can't take that away from him. And one of the things about Jim Ross, and this is a story that I've heard years ago when I was listening to his radio show, and I thought it was one of the nicest things I heard, and very few announcers can say anything like this, but Jim Ross used to do a radio show for WCW in Atlanta, and it was played up here. I would hear it once in a while, and he actually had a caller call in and tell him that he was blind. The caller was blind, and he thanked JR for his announcing, saying that he watches wrestling, but obviously can't see it since he's blind, but he uses Jim Ross's words to help him see the match, and he thanked him for it. It was really, like, an emotional, like, you didn't expect it. Like, this was in between questions, like, hey, JR, what's Sting's real name? You know, stuff like that. And then here's this guy who's like, you know, I'm blind. I can't watch wrestling, but I do it. I'm able to watch it because of you, and I want to thank you for it. And it really was, like, an emotional, unexpected moment on JR's show, and I always remembered that. I mean, this was years ago. I've been, like, a teenager, and it's kind of stuck with me. And I always thought to myself, you know, that's probably the ultimate compliment you can get as an announcer. Jim Ross was always good at what he did. Even at, honest to God, 50%, he's better than most guys out there. He knows his stuff, and he knows how to relate it to people, and he knows how to kind of banter back and forth. Now, obviously, over time, WWE has had him with Jerry Lawler, and the two of them have been doing commentary on Monday Night Raw since a year before God's parents were born. I mean, they've been on that show, you know, for years. Puppy, Slobberknocker, blah, 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 Booger Red, and all that stuff. So obviously, I mean, as time goes on, announced teams start to get stale. Jerry Lawler, playing the role of a heel with babyface Jim Ross, always worked out. The two of them can argue, banter back and forth. But now Jerry Lawler is playing kind of a pseudo babyface. And when you're a babyface color commentator, your jokes can't really be mean. So all of his jokes are perverted. He comes off like this dirty, disgusting. He comes off like himself, and he goes out there, and he does all his perversion jokes. Sorry, Jerry Lawler. And he does all his stuff. So, of course, the announcing situation starts to get a little bit stale. So what does WWE do? Well, they throw the coach out there with them. Now, Jonathan Coachman, good guy for all intents, but people like him. Never really heard too many people badmouth Coachman behind the scenes, because he's a nice guy. He's just a good person. The problem with Coachman always had this very generic, no-frills style of announcing when he would go out there, and it never really worked out too well. So WWE turned him heel. They had him turn bad and go out there and join Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross. And what would happen is Vince McMahon would feed Coachman lines to say to Jim Ross, oh, you know, tell him he's ugly. You know, oh, you're ugly. And it was stupid. It was like, you know, teasing the kid on recess. And you could tell by watching the show. People would ask about it, even people who weren't deeply into wrestling. I would run into people that I knew who watched the industry and didn't really follow the internet, and they'd be like, why are they so mean to Jim Ross? I'd be like, well, because they're, you know, assholes. What else can I say? So Vince McMahon kind of made it his game to mess with Jim Ross for a while. So now here we are. The show's falling apart. Crazy stuff is happening. Jim Ross gets swapped out of his backstage duties as executive vice president of talent relations by Johnny. Make sure you dress nice and grow a few inches. Laurinaitis. And now he's just doing commentary. So WWE pulls him out of that position. So they take a look at their show, Monday Night Raw. And what's the main problem with the show? Is it the fact that most of the guys are playing gay rapists? That's their new go-to gimmick. Is that the problem? No, it's not the problem. Is the problem things like, I don't know, things like Matt Hardy saying wrestling is fake? Is that the problem? No, it's not the problem. Is the problem things like, I don't know, Triple H, the game, eating you and my pedigree? No, it's not Triple H. It can't be Triple H. Is it the McMahon family? Is it Steph and Shane and Vin? No, you know what it is? It's the commentary on the show. So there was a situation. It was the USA Homecoming edition of Raw. And Steve Austin came out, and there was this segment. It was, I think it lasted about a little less than a month, this segment. And it was, God, it felt like it was forever. Steve Austin went out there. He had the McMahon family, and he stunned each one of them. He stunned Shane. He stunned Stephanie. He stunned Vince. He gave Linda the stunner that she kind of, he gave her the stunner, and then all of her bones kind of dissolved, and she just flopped to the ground like this dead fish. That was kind of funny. But he stunned everybody. So Vince McMahon, all pissed off, said, someone's going to get fired next week. So now everybody waited to hear who was going to get fired. Well, guess what? They fired Jim Ross. How did they fire Jim Ross? They had Linda McMahon, robotic Vicky from Small Wonder, you know, hello, Jamie. Linda McMahon turned heel and kicked Jim Ross in the balls. And that was how they got rid of Jim Ross. So they pulled him off the show and had Coachman with Jerry Lawler. It was so bad, Coachman and Lawler together on commentary, that within 2 weeks, they had another person thrown into the mix. Who is that person? Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves, because you're missing something fun here. WWE decides to run this angle where Stone Cold Steve Austin is going to Taboo Tuesday, and he's facing the coach. And the stipulation of their match is, well, if Austin wins, Jim Ross gets his job back. Yeah, terrific, wonderful. So this whole thing is just some stupid bullshit angle, and we'll have Jim Ross back, and Coachman sucks, and he's really boring to listen to. But, you know, don't worry, you guys are going to get Jim Ross back. Well, you know, something must have happened in between Taboo Tuesday and when that happened, because Steve Austin found out that Jim Ross wasn't coming back. And that he was probably going to have to lose to Coachman, and it was all just so Vince McMahon could have fun. So guess what? Austin left. Austin left the day before Taboo Tuesday, leaving his substitution for his match against Coachman to be Batista. And Coachman, they brought out Vader and Goldust as his backup. Now, Vader weighed about 3,400 pounds, I think it was, and fell on his ass after his debut on Raw. And Goldust, well, he's Goldust. So that's how they swapped out Steve Austin from that match. So this is an angle so bad, it actually ruined a pay-per-view horribly. So Austin is now gone. So what does WWE do at Taboo Tuesday? Well, that's when they decided that Coachman just can't cut the mustard anymore. So they brought out, oh my God, Joey Styles, the voice of ECW, to take over for Jim Ross. Well, Joey Styles, of course, had a huge, huge impact on the, I can't even say it, even joking around. Joey Styles, not terrible. And a good announcer in his own right. I mean, obviously hitting some pitfalls because in ECW, he was using his gimmick of the overexcited announcer to call the action of a genuinely exciting program. And you can play the overexcited gimmick when the shows that you're calling are exciting. But when you play the overexcited gimmick and the shows that you're calling suck ass, well then, you come off like some second-rate salesman. So that's kind of how Joey Styles comes off. But in the grand scheme of things, in this dilapidated world of wrestling announcers that we're stuck with right now in 2005, Joey Styles is the closest they're going to get to something good in the absence of good old JR. So they brought Joey Styles out, and I got news for you. Joey Styles, being in that announce table, is inconsequential. And I'll tell you guys point blank, watching Monday Night Raw a few weeks ago, Ric Flair is fighting Kurt Angle in the opening match of Raw. And I'll never forget this because it was so surreal and so strange. And there was a spot where Coachman and Lawler are just going back and forth with each other. You know, oh, puppies, and oh, my God, puppies, oh, my God. And back and forth, and they defer, Coachman and Lawler defer to the third man, to their straight guy. You know, it's always, you know, the two jokers and then the one straight man right there in the middle. And they deferred to the third man. And for a split second, I expected to hear Jim Ross. And you know why I expected to hear Jim Ross? Because nothing had changed in Jim Ross's absence. The dynamic between the three of them hadn't changed. Nothing had changed on the show. It was as if Jim Ross was there, only he wasn't there, and the guy who replaced him wasn't as good. And that was where we ended up. So WWE took this angle, took this storyline, ruined Taboo Tuesday with it, okay? Ruined a whole episode of Raw. Turned Linda heel and then never brought it up again except for the following week. Linda McMahon was on TV once since she turned heel. And now she's been gone. So WWE took their broadcasting team, swapped the whole thing out, did it in this big, grandiose way, and now is stuck with what they have. And I got news for you. If WWE was going to make these sweeping, huge changes to their programming, Jim Ross being replaced on Raw was not the route to go. Also, we should also add in that WWE went out of their way to try to replace him with the guy from UFC who knows nothing about wrestling, Mike Goldberg. And I got news for you. If your name is Goldberg, don't talk to the McMahon family. Just stay the hell away from them. But Mike Goldberg must have heard that from somebody because he figured, hey, I'm next. He goes out there. They offered him a lot of money. And he said no. And why did he say no? Well, I don't know. It might go back to the fact that the shows are weird and have gay rapists being pushed as heroes. So yeah, I guess it all comes back to bites in the ass in the end. So WWE, the biggest problem that they could find to correct this year was their announcing situation. They have done nothing with it. If anything, the shows have gotten far worse. They ruined a pay-per-view. They turned Linda heel. Everything just went to hell. But yeah, so when you guys look back years from now and you think back to yourself, you know what? Monday Night Raw really went through a lot of changes in 2005, but perhaps the most important change that they could have possibly made was to take out the announcer that no one was complaining about and bring in a guy who is screaming and yelling, oh my God, over Gene Snitsky stiffing somebody's foot. Yeah. So, there you have it, guys. I want to thank everybody who took the time to vote on the Moments of Insanity for 2005. As I said before, if you did access this through an external link, go right now to worldwrestlinginsanity.com. Click on the audio link at the top of the page. On there, we have the top five Moments of Insanity from 2004, from last year, some other information that you guys might find relevant to this year's Moments of Insanity. I want to thank all the readers of the site and the message board who took the time to vote on the top five Moments of Insanity this year. In fact, I want to thank everybody who has contributed to the site, who has read the site. I want to thank everybody who's on staff, all the columnists, all the TV reviewers, everybody who's just done a great job here. And making 2005 our first year here in business at WorldWrestlingInsanity.com a great one. And guys, it's only going to get better. 2006, we're going to have a ton of guests. We've already brought in guys like Spike Dudley, Vince Russo, you know, Dave Hepner, Charlie Haas, Tom Pritchard. They've all been on Radio Free Insanity, and we got plenty more coming in 2006, plus the release of my book, World Wrestling Insanity, The Decline and Fall of a Family Empire, which will be shipped out to you, provided you ordered it, which, come on, you ordered it, in May. So yeah, guys, there's plenty to look forward to. We're very excited about 2006. So until I next see you guys, the second week of January with the next edition of JG's Raw Insanity, I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for taking the time out to click. And we will be seeing you in 06. We got a lot planned. So until then, this is James Gutman saying thank you for listening, be well, and thank you so much for sharing our insanity.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.